Listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. Just ahead, more killings are reported in eastern Ukraine as four regional leaders meet in Belarus to try to stop the fighting. The U.S. president's request for congressional authorization to fight the Islamic State gets mixed reactions on Capitol Hill. And U.S. intelligence officials issue a stark warning about the surge of foreigners joining the Islamic State. I'm Michael Lippin. The leaders of Ukraine, Russia, France, and Germany have been meeting in the capital of Belarus to try to find a way to stop the civil war in eastern Ukraine. Ukrainian separatists and emergency personnel said a shell hit a bus station in the rebel-held eastern city of Donetsk on Wednesday, killing at least two people. Ukrainian military officials said rebel attacks near the government-controlled town of Debaltseve also killed at least 19 soldiers and wounded 78 others. Before Wednesday's summit got underway in Minsk, Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko described it as one of the last chances to end the fighting between his country's forces and pro-Russian separatists. Also attending the meeting were Russian President Vladimir Putin, German Chancellor Angela Merkel, and French President François Hollande. U.S. President Barack Obama has asked Congress to formally authorize the use of military force in the war against the Islamic State terrorist group. Speaking at the White House on Wednesday, Mr. Obama promised that his request will not become an authorization for another ground war like the United States fought in Iraq and Afghanistan in the past decade. The U.S. president said his proposed congressional authorization would limit the U.S. military operations against the Islamic State group, or ISIL, to 3 years.
Now, make no mistake, this is a difficult mission, and it will remain difficult for some time. It's going to take time to dislodge these terrorists, especially from urban areas. But our coalition is on the offensive. ISIL is on the defensive, and ISIL is going to lose.
Well, Mr. Obama also said the measure would bar American troops from engaging in what he called enduring offensive ground combat. The president's war powers request must be approved by both the United States Senate and the House of Representatives. VOA's Cindy Sain reports from Capitol Hill on the reaction from key U.S. lawmakers.
Democratic Senator Tim Kaine of Virginia is a close ally of the president, but he has been asking Mr. Obama for months to come to Congress to seek authorization for the ongoing military operations against the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria.
Finally, we're at the point where Congress is going to take seriously its most solemn obligation.
Republican House Speaker John Boehner also welcomed the request from the president.
The delivery of this authorization is the beginning of a legislative process that will involve hearings, markups, and I'm sure changes as we go through this process. And so at this point, I think we've got an awful lot of work to do before we get into what I'm for and what I'm against.
Democratic House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi spoke for many who are wary of the U.S. getting involved in another protracted ground war in the Middle East, saying the American people have no appetite for what she called U.S. boots on the ground. Cindy Sain, VOA News, on Capitol Hill.
Well, despite U.S.-led efforts to curb the flow of Islamic State fighters to Iraq and Syria, the numbers keep rising. U.S. intelligence officials now say the group boasts more than 20,000 foreigners in its ranks. VOA National Security reporter Jeff Selden has more.
The Committee on Homeland Security will come to order.
In the secure setting of a hearing on Capitol Hill, some of the nation's top anti-terror officials warned the reach of groups like the Islamic State is expanding at a worrisome rate. FBI Assistant Director Michael Steinbach told lawmakers tracking the fighters, even the Americans, has been difficult.
I don't know every person there, and I don't know everyone coming back. So it's not even close to being under control.
U.S. officials say at least 150 Americans are now part of the more than 3,400 Westerners, making up the 20,000 foreign fighters who have flowed into Iraq and Syria. For National Counterterrorism Center Director Nicholas Rasmussen, the attraction is clear.
ISIL's media capabilities are robust and effective. Moreover, their ability to generate timely propaganda continues to grow. The majority of those who are getting to the conflict zone right now, are fighting or looking to fight for ISIL on the battlefield.
U.S. intelligence officials say the Islamic State may be the most visible threat, but caution, groups like Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula remain intent on attacking American interests. both in the U.S. and abroad. Jeff Selden, VOA News, Washington.
Houthi rebels in Yemen's capital have seized U.S. embassy vehicles after American diplomats left the country due to the embassy's closure. CNN says the U.S. vehicles were taken away from the Sana'a airport. The United States, Britain, and France announced the closure of their embassies in Yemen this week because of deteriorating security conditions in the country. A female suicide bomber has blown herself up in the Niger town of Difa a day after authorities declared a state of emergency there because of attacks by Nigeria's Boko Haram Islamist militants. The governor of Difa told VOA that the suicide bomber tried to attack the military on Wednesday, but succeeded only in killing herself. Boko Haram launched attacks in Difa on Friday and Monday, but were driven back by troops from Niger and Chad. The United Nations Refugee Agency says at least 300 migrants are missing and likely dead after they tried to cross the Mediterranean Sea in inflatable boats in recent days. The UN High Commissioner for Refugees said Wednesday it is shocked by new information that shows the scale of the tragedy is much larger than initially reported. On Tuesday, Italian authorities said at least 29 African migrants died of hypothermia while trying to cross the sea from Libya in frigid weather. Since then, reports have emerged that four inflatable boats had left Libya together, carrying more than 400 people. The UNHCR says the Italian Coast Guard brought 110 survivors to safety on the Italian island of Lampedusa. Well, police in the U.S. state of North Carolina say a man has shot and killed three people in an apparent parking dispute near a university, while the father of two of the victims is claiming that the shooting was an anti-Muslim hate crime. 46-year-old Craig Stephen Hicks is facing first-degree murder charges in the slayings of Dea Shadi Barakat, his wife Yusur Abu Salha, and her sister Razan Abu Salha of the city of Raleigh. The three victims, all Muslim, were found dead on Tuesday in an apartment complex outside the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Hicks had posted anti-religious statements on social media, but U.S. authorities have not yet disclosed a motive in the killings. Well, that's it for International Edition on the Voice of America. Join us again at 0330 Universal Time for an expanded look at the latest world news. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. If you want to reach me on Twitter, you can find me at Michael_Lippin, spelled L-I-P-I-N. See you next time.
It's time for business news on VOA with Ira Melman. I'm Jim Stevenson. After switching between gains and losses, U.S. stocks ended Wednesday's choppy session essentially flat. Investors remain jittery amid worries about whether Greece and its creditors will reach an agreement to avoid debt default. After that choppy session, the S&P 500 index ended at 2068. Four of the 10 main sectors finished higher, with consumer staples and technology stocks leading gains. The Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped more than 100 points at session lows. It recovered at the end of the day to end flat at 17,862. The NASDAQ composite, however, outperformed other indexes, rising 0.4% to close at 4801, thanks largely to a big 2.3% gain in Apple.
Headlines about Greece and whether it will leave the eurozone or restructure its debt have been driving markets lately. Greece's new anti-austerity government is meeting with eurozone finance ministers in Brussels, but few are expecting any deal to be reached.
The federal government ran a bigger deficit in January, pushing the imbalance so far this budget year up 6.2% from the same period a year ago. The U.S. Treasury Department said Wednesday the deficit for January stood at $17.5 billion. That was compared to $10.3 billion a year ago. For the first 4 months of the budget year that began in October, the deficit widened to $194.2 billion. That's from $182.8 billion the same period last year.
Well, pressured by Congress, the Internal Revenue Service said Wednesday it's changing its policies and apologizing for seizing banks' accounts from otherwise law-abiding business owners simply because they structured bank transactions to avoid federal reporting requirements. That's a look at business news on VOA.
This is VOA Global on the Voice of America. I'm Jim Stevenson with Ira Melman. You know, brain tumors are a very difficult and traumatic health issue to deal with. David Byrd is going to join us with his Now segment and talk about some new brain tumor drugs, giving promising hope to those who are facing that.
One of the most, obviously, science, one of the things that we report upon the most because it means so much to everyone worldwide. This is VOA News. I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. Recent confrontations between some white police officers and African Americans have sparked debate about racial divisions in America and the sometimes hostile relationship between police and some communities. Many police departments, including the one in racially diverse Long Beach, California, are using a technique called community policing to fight both crime and improve relations. Elizabeth Lee has the story from Long Beach.
Through the years, the city of Long Beach has struggled with gang violence, poverty, and racial tensions among residents and with police. 22-year-old resident Jacob Sariana says he has experienced it firsthand.
They always try to mess with me, like, and then they ask, what's the reason for you pulling me over? Oh, because you fit the description. Really? Really, yeah, I guess I'm always fitting the description then because I'm always getting pulled over.
Last year, the city saw its lowest violent crime rate in more than 40 years. So far this year, the numbers are even lower. Don Rodriguez works with young people in the city and says officers are more involved with the community than ever before.
Now what we're seeing is we're seeing more community people involved in the policing, working with the police, getting a better feel of the community.
Long Beach Police Chief Jim McDonald says,
we build a team. And when you have a team, when a crisis comes up, you're not dealing with it by yourself. And too often when we see things get volatile across America, and whether it's a racial issue or another similar type of issue, it's often because there aren't those pre-existing relationships in place.
Elizabeth Lee for VOA News, Long Beach.
Boxing legend Muhammad Ali has been hospitalized with a mild case of pneumonia. Ali's spokesman says the illness was caught early and Ali is expected to make a full recovery. Recently, VOA's Penelope Pulo was here in the cafe with a look at the documentary, I Am Ali. Here is an encore presentation.
My father has a lot of sides, and you hear about the fights. You don't hear about family that much and what that meant to him.
What's your dad's name?
Muhammad Ali.
No one, not even some members of his family, knew of the existence of these audio tapes until recently. They thread the narrative of the boxing champion's life in Claire Lewis's documentary. Ali's daughter, Hannah, offered the tapes to Lewis.
My father was always conscious about history. And, you know, I think that's one of the reasons why he made this series of audio tape cassette recordings.
Because he refused to serve in the Vietnam War, he was stripped of his championship title and his boxing license was revoked. His close friend, former football player Jim Brown, remembers.
He had a lot of courage. The risk he had to take and then to be isolated, to have his crown taken away, not be able to make a living, that was difficult.
But he stuck to his convictions, and in 1974, at the age of 32, Ali made a comeback.
When Joyce Fulmer meets me, he'll pay his debt. I can drown a drink of water and kill a dead tree. Wait till you see Muhammad Ali.
He defeated formidable George Foreman and recaptured his title.
I get into the ring with the guy. I bluffed him. I done everything. Beat him up basically for about 5 or 6 rounds. I thought it was easy. Then about the 6th round, he whispered in my ear after I'd hit him in the side, "That all you got, George?" And that was about all I had.
I was the Concord of boxing. I was at a high altitude than the rest, moving fast.
As Ali has aged, we hear him begin to slur his words, a sign of developing Parkinson's disease. But to the world and his children, he remains an icon of power and grace. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. Please join us every day at voanews.com and many podcast platforms.
Hi, everyone. I'm David Byrd, and here's what's happening now. Brain tumors called glioblastomas are the most common and most deadly type of brain tumors. One of them killed former Massachusetts Senator Edward Kennedy in 2009. But a new experimental treatment regimen offers hope to patients by quickly determining if anti-cancer drugs are working. The program at the Barrow Neurological Institute in Phoenix, Arizona, is for people whose brain cancer has returned after earlier surgery. Lori Simons, a 55-year-old former pharmacist, is one of those people.
Now I have a second glioblastoma, or so we think, and I'm going to take a pill tomorrow morning at 3 a.m., and 8 hours later, they're going to see if the drug penetrated my tumor.
Under this new treatment, doctors look at the genetics of the patient's previous tumor to see what drugs might work on the cancer. When one is found, they give the patient the drug and then remove the new tumors to see if the medicine has worked. If the medicine is effective, then the patient continues to get a drug that otherwise would not have been available to them. If it has not worked, patients move on to another drug. Dr. Nader Sanai of the Barrow Neurological Institute is directing the so-called Phase Zero study. He says the cancer that he is battling is one of the most aggressive kinds.
Glioblastoma is the most common brain tumor in humans. It's also the most deadly and considered to be the most deadly tumor a human can get.
Dr. Sanai says that his study is a new way to try out drugs and find ways to extend patients' lives.
So this is a fairly new way to trial brain tumor drugs. We've learned over decades of failures that most of these drugs, in fact, are not doing what we think they were intended to do. They're not getting to the tumors the way we think they would, and they're not having the effects on the tumors at a genetic level.
Dr. Sanai's study has tested one drug from AstraZeneca PLC in 4 patients. They hope to add another drug from the company Novartis soon. Sanai said the study helps to save precious time that under other testing formats would be lost waiting for clinical trials to be approved.
The whole field has had a paradigm shift and switched gears. We're now looking at drugs very quickly to assess these two simple objectives. Is the drug getting there, and is it doing what it's supposed to do? If it is, then we can greenlight the drug for other larger trials. But if it's not, then we can stop the development of the drug and move on to other drugs that could be more effective.
Clinical trials usually have 3 phases to evaluate a drug's safety, effectiveness, side effects, and dosage before they are given to patients. The trials take a long time and cost millions of dollars, and there's no guarantee of success. Dr. Nader Sanai says that the new method of conducting trials reduces the time and the cost of getting new treatments.
These are drugs that have been tried and proven to be safe for other disease types, other types of cancers. But because of the way these drugs work, we think that they could be useful for brain tumors. So a phase zero study is not a replacement for animal studies. All the animal studies are already done. But these are oftentimes the first times the drugs are being tested in brain tumor patients.
Lori Simons says that she had no trouble being a test subject.
People in society should help and be caring and loving, and so I'm doing that.
The drugs Lori took last October before her surgery did not prove effective against her glioblastoma. She has just recently completed radiation therapy and will undergo more tests to see if it worked. So what do you think? Let us know your opinion by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia. And remember, you can always email your questions or comments to voaasia@voanews.com. And that's what's happening now. Until next time, I'm David Byrd. We'll be right back.
This is VOA Global. I have a story for you here that a federal appeals court in Ohio has ruled against the former Ohio teacher who had sued the school administrators for discriminating against her because she has a phobia for young kids.
Yeah, why teach?
Yeah.
if they're scared of the kids.
The court in Cincinnati Wednesday upheld a lower court decision dismissing 63-year-old Maria Walter Willard's breach of contract claim against the city schools in suburban Cincinnati. Why do you start teaching to begin with?
Time for sports on VOA Global. He's Ira Melman. I'm Jim Stevenson. Jerry Tarkanian, one of the most famous college basketball coaches in the United States, a maverick who feuded with the establishment and built a powerhouse program at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, died Wednesday at the age of 84. Tarkanian, who waged a decades-long battle with the National Collegiate Athletic Association, had been in declining health for several years. His son, Danny, said that his father fought an infection since he was hospitalized Monday in Las Vegas with breathing difficulty. Tarkanian coached the Running Rebels of UNLV, taking them to four Final Fours and winning a national championship in 1990 with one of the most dominant college teams ever.
That was the team that was undefeated, is that correct?
Yes, it was. In fact, I got to sit next to him at a Final Four in 2004. Very entertaining.
Yeah, fun guy to be around, yeah. Well, it was one of the feel-good sports stories of the year in the United States, the tale of an all-black youth baseball team that won a national title and earned a trip to the White House for a meeting with President Obama. A team whose players ranged in age from 11 to 13 captured the attention of the country and the hearts of their home city of Chicago. The fairy tale came crashing down Wednesday when the team was stripped of the National Little League title after an investigation revealed it had fielded ineligible players. A team called Jackie Robinson West was found to have gone outside its Chicago area borders to field players. Some team officials allegedly went to surrounding leagues to convince them to go along with what they had done.
The South African city of Durban is the only candidate left to host the 2022 Commonwealth Games, the first in Africa, after Edmonton withdrew its bid because of economic insecurity. Edmonton and Commonwealth Games Canada said Tuesday they will instead focus on bidding for the 2026 Commonwealth Games. Edmonton's decision left Durban on South Africa's east coast as the only option for 2022. The winning city will be formally announced in September.
Alex Rodriguez met with top New York Yankees officials Tuesday and apologized to the team as he prepares to report to spring training following his season-long suspension for violations of baseball's drug agreement and labor contract. More to be said about that story as the season goes on. That's a look at sports.
Well, the Grammys usually bring together some unlikely duos, and we saw that this year with Tony Bennett and Lady Gaga. They look like an elegant couple out on the town, at least according to a music publication describing the unlikely duo immediately after last week's Grammy Award presentations when the two won the Best Traditional Pop Vocal Album Grammy for last year's Standards collaboration Cheek to Cheek.
Just minutes earlier, they had stood on the show's stage in the round to perform the title track with a jazz quartet. Jeff London has a closer look at that collaboration.
You might think they go together like oil and water or chalk and cheese.
I think it's probably what a lot of people are thinking when they hear Tony Bennett wants to do a jazz album with Lady Gaga and they say, huh? What are you talking about?
It's not the first time Lady Gaga has recorded with Tony Bennett. The pair collaborated on The Lady is a Tramp for his previous duets album, which won a Grammy.
Too hungry for dinner at 8.
I'm starving.
She loves the theater, but she never comes late.
I never bother with people that I hate. That's why this chick is a tramp.
The two decided to team up for a full album of standards. And Bennett says Lady Gaga's up to the challenge.
She's actually a very authentic jazz singer. She'll turn a phrase, she'll make it different because of the moment that she's singing. And so what happens is it keeps the songs alive. The interpretations become very intimate and everlasting.
I used to visit all the very gay places, those come what may places,
Well, one relaxes on the axis of the wheel of life to get the feel of life.
Like Bennett, Lady Gaga was born in New York City, and she's actually been singing jazz since she was a kid. But she's, of course, best known for her pop songs and her over-the-top stage shows, which draw sellout crowds around the world. So why did she decide to record with Tony Bennett?
He's brought out a subtlety in me that I've missed for a while because my life is very noisy.
But the new record is not, says New Yorker pop music critic Sasha Frere Jones.
You know, her records have become increasingly sonically so crowded, so noisy, but not with noise, just sort of noisy with information that I don't understand what's going on exactly. And this is a wide open, fairly natural record. I'm sure there's some editing involved in there, but you know, she's there.
The greatest thing you'll ever learn is just to love and be loved in return.
I don't know what the world will make of it, but it's actually pretty good.
Frere Jones points out that Lady Gaga is more than pop spectacle. She can really play piano and sing. She says working with the 88-year-old Bennett has been a real education.
I love watching Tony perform. I always sit in the theater and watch when he's performing without me with his quartet.
They say into your early life romance came.
Tony Bennett hopes the learning experience extends to Lady Gaga's audience.
It's the first time that young people that love you so much will fall in love with George Gershwin.
Oh, yeah.
Cole Porter.
Oh, yeah.
With Irving Berlin.
And most of them, a lot of them, surprisingly, know some of those songs. And they're sort of getting more and more and more excited, and it's becoming cooler for them to talk about who wrote what. Tony's really opening up a whole new generation.
They all laughed at Christopher Columbus when he said the world was round.
They all laughed when Edison recorded sound.
I feel very validated by this. You know, he's given my fans a gift by saying to them that he likes the way I sing jazz.
They also seem to genuinely like each other. For VOA News, I'm Jeff London in New York.
Great story. She can sing. I mean, if she can sing that, she can sing anything.
I'll tell you, that's very impressive. You know, as much we were talking about how impressive Tony Bennett has been through the years, maintaining his vocal quality and stage presence, but to draw that out of Lady Gaga, wow.
Yeah.
That was really something.
Yeah, there are some people who don't like the record, but not many. But apparently, I didn't see the performance in the Grammy Awards. I don't know whether you did or not, but apparently it was really quite, quite good. Well, what is your native language? If you speak Spanish, you speak the world's happiest language.
¿Qué pasa?
At least, aren't you happy? At least that's the the view of scientists who claim it promotes joy and social cohesion. Study of the world's most commonly used words reveals that human evolution favors the expression of positivity over sadness and cynicism. Mm. Yeah. Researchers located 100,000 of the most frequently used words uttered and written on Twitter and TV and song lyrics, the New York Times, and movie titles across the world's 10 most popular languages. A team of researchers at the University of Vermont said that put them on a 9-point emotional scale. Spanish proved the happiest. Brazilian, Portuguese, thought were they the same, Brazilian and Portuguese, English and Indonesian rounded out the top five.
English is in there. How about that? Qué bueno.
Yeah, see, that's the extent of my language. Thank you to
Roll
Tracy
credits,
Carter.
Ira.
Yeah. Zubir Osman is our technical director. So is Zinab Abdelrahman. And Diane Gal is our boss lady, and we thank her as always.
And Tracy Carter, our producer and director. Thank
Didn't
you.
Did I say Tracy Carter?
Oh, maybe you did.
I did. Well, Tracy Carter twice.
Join us again tomorrow.